Welcome to the Get to the Point podcast, a podcast for busy women who want to have real conversations about fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle, but without rambling or wasting time. Let's get to the point. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Get to the Point podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Ann, certified personal trainer, nutrition coach, and founder of Fat Loss Lifestyle School. I'm really excited to have a new guest on the podcast today. I have Dr. Adrian Chavez joining me, and we are going to be talking all about one of our favorite topics around here at Fat Loss Lifestyle School, which is simplifying nutrition. Because if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you agree with us that it's gotten absolutely crazy, overwhelming, complicated, and just undoable. So hopefully we're going to be breaking down some myths and talking about some really interesting topics in this conversation. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you having me on. My name is Adrian Chavez. I have a PhD in nutrition and exercise science. The name of the actual degree has changed so many times, like the program that I'm in. So it's weird for me to even describe what it's called, but nutrition was my focus during my PhD. Before that, I had a bachelor's and master's in exercise science. And it kind of leads back to what brought me into this field is I played basketball growing up and just saw that I saw what I was able to do with my body. Like when I was younger, I wasn't that good. And then I got a lot better over time by just working. And I noticed I got really fascinated with that. And when I first got to college, you know, everyone, exercise science isn't an actual, you know, degree program, or it is a degree program, but you don't think about it. You know, no one ever said, you know, you can learn about the body and how that works. And so I was like an accounting major, engineering major for the first couple of years. I took all these math classes. I think I took like differential equations 3 or something. Like I took all these math classes, and then I was like, so I kept playing basketball, started, you know, paying attention to my diet. And that's all I was doing outside of school. Like I was doing well in school, but like spending so much time on this other area because it was a passion of mine, you know? So I decided to shift my major to exercise science and really focus on that. And up until like my master's degree, my intention was to go train like athletes. I wanted to work with professional basketball players. I was planning on getting a PhD in biomechanics, exercise physiology, and trying to go work in that field. And then I took a class that just changed my whole perspective on things. And I had a little bit of an experience in my own life where I just realized how important nutrition was. And then the application, not necessarily from a performance standpoint, which is what I've always looked at it, but like a health standpoint, like this is more important. that's the crossroads that hit me. Was performance is great, and that's awesome, and me working in that field would be awesome, but I saw the application from a health standpoint. So that's what kind of opened my eyes to saying, okay, I need to learn the nutrition side of things because I know the exercise science side, and really learn how to apply this in a way that it really impacts people. And that's what led me to getting a PhD, where, you know, I was running programs where we're teaching people about nutrition, you know, in low income settings. You know, these individuals have limited resources. We have to simplify things in terms of nutrition, in terms of exercise. So that was kind of my experience during my PhD, was running these programs. I put together and built programs and ran those for a few years. So what led me here though, because now I basically do a lot of different things, but I create courses. That's my main focus of this year, is to create more courses and create more educational content that I package into a way that helps people understand different topics. But I've done a lot of one-on-one and group programs for the last 4 or 5 years. Been basically working independently, done research for different startups and things like that, and have had a wide range of different experiences because I was working in academia. I got my PhD. I enjoyed that, but it's very demanding. And I'm a single father. So at that point I got custody of my son, and I couldn't maintain that workload and still actually be a dad. So I had to figure something else out. And that's where I really saw the opportunities available with, you know, creating content, with working I had this knowledge to work one-on-one with individuals. So for the last 4 or 5 years, been primarily working with one-on-one with individuals with GI issues, like gut issues, IBS, inflammatory bowel disease. Those are some of the most difficult clients, because it's microbiome. We don't really understand it that well. It's largely driven by the microbiome, and they're preyed upon a lot. And I saw that as I first got into this space. I would see people who had these digestive issues who were completely confused. I didn't really know how to help them that well either, because we didn't really study it that much, you know, in any level of my education. It wasn't, we didn't really talk about the microbiome that much, because we barely were able to measure it in the last 15 years, 20 years. So I had to kind of dive back into the research, which is just what I do, you know, during my PhD, where I'm doing, you know, they had us reading 30, 40 papers a week minimum. And so you do that week after week after week, year after year. You read a lot of research and you kind of get used to that. So I still always continue to read research. So what I did was kind of dug back into the research on IBS, gut issues, IBD. And for the last several years, I've been working with clients, you know, specifically focused on those digestive issues. And it's amazing how much of an impact nutrition makes and how much it's overlooked by most GI doctors, which ends up leaving people stuck looking for an answer online. And this is going to lead us into some of the stuff that we're going to talk about, because people with GI issues get preyed upon a lot in this space.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think it sounds like that's one of the things that motivates both of us to do what we do, is to teach people how simple it really can be, because there are people out there who are overcomplicating it and trying to take advantage of you.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that. But I want to go back and touch on something that you just said. When you were running these research programs, doing nutrition education with low-income communities, et cetera, what was your favorite part about that? Or like, what from that work stood out to you the most and was like the most gratifying?
I mean, you know, I hear a lot of people, and I see a lot of people say this on social media, like there's so many different barriers involved, and I get it. Like that's how I grew up. So I think that piece of it is kind of what led me into that research, is I grew up in poverty. So I understand what those people are facing, but also understand like health is important. You know, exercise is still important. Yeah. And I think the most important part that, or the thing that's been the most gratifying, is seeing like, this was 7-8 years ago, and a lot of those people still follow me on social media today. And when I look at their profiles, like they have still changed their health years down the line, because we didn't try to sell them BS. It was like, hey, just switch to whole grains, add some vegetables into your meals. You can still have tacos, but just put some vegetables with it. You know, instead of on the weekends having a barbecue, how about we all have a picnic at the mountain, because it was in Phoenix. You know, so we got them into hiking, and like a lot of the women in there's only a couple of men, because women are the ones that sign up for these programs, especially in those areas. So a lot of them still, you know, meet up and still go hiking on their own, and I still see them posting those things. So I think that's the most gratifying thing. It's not, I know people say it's, you know, it's not lack of education, and that's not it, but like the way that we created the programs, we created some community, we provided some education, and we helped them to understand, like the first several sessions that I would do would be talking about the true risk of diabetes and heart disease. Like these things are going to impact you at the end of your life if you continue living this way. And I would always have, and this would always make an impact. I would say, hey, raise your hand if you know someone who has diabetes. And this is, you know, this is a Hispanic, 99% Hispanic, 85% from Mexico, everybody, you know, everybody multiple times over. And so that would, you know, kind of set the tone for saying, okay, this is important. Now let us help you do the simple things that you need to do. You just need to be a little bit more active. You just need to eat some vegetables. You need to make better choices with your carbohydrates. The fatty meats need to go because that's a big problem in that community.
For
eat
sure.
More salsa, eat more of these things. Like, and I know how they eat. I eat that way, you know? So I knew how to help them make the culturally appropriate changes that they would be able to sustain over the long term. And that's the piece that, like, sustainability is the important piece, because your body's never going to go away. So, like, if you can't stop at some point, you have to just keep doing whatever it is that you're doing and make it, you know, make it in a way that fits within everything else you have going on.
Yeah. Coming from, like, an academic background and having a PhD in nutrition and knowing all the things and reading all of this research, when you're sitting across the table or, you know, on a phone call with someone who is just overwhelmed, confused, looking for help, where do you start with them? Like, taking them from this place of overwhelm and confusion and just getting them to buy into understanding what you just said. Like, it really is just all these little simple changes every day that are going to add up to a lifestyle change.
So this is one of the beautiful things about working the way that I do, and that most of my clientele come from various sources of content that I've created, that they understand my philosophy going into it. So, but I do understand, and I do have clients that are massively overwhelmed and still kind of in that boat of, like, I have no idea where to start. And the most important thing is stop listening to all of the nonsense, like the magazines. If it's in the New York Times or the Washington Post or in a magazine in your checkout line, or 99.9% of stuff on social media, if this person is not well qualified to be speaking about that topic, it's probably not entirely accurate or true. And if you assimilate that piece of information into your brain, you're going to be highly knowledgeable on complete misinformation. And so you're going to think that I've spoken to so many people who they spend so much time in this area trying to learn, and they feel like they have knowledge in this topic. But the reality is that most of the stuff out there is not accurate. It's just not. And it takes a long time. Like, I when I say I read 30 research papers a week for a, you know, every single year, I did not take time off during my period. Like, I had no weekends off, no holidays, no summers. Like, those things didn't exist. And I still kind of work that way, not to the same extent, but because this is important, the accuracy is important. And the part that that's been a struggle for me is, you know, like you mentioned, coming from an academic background, I had never been on social media at all until about 6 years ago. And so I got onto Instagram and started putting out nutrition content, and then, you know, trying to learn how to, you know, build a business and figure out how to get clients and stuff like that. Like, I paid for marketing courses and things like that, where they're basically teaching you how to scam people. Yeah. And I spent a lot of money on marketing courses that were like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to bring them in. We're going to, you know, get someone into a webinar. We're going to scare the crap out of them and tell them that we have the only answer. And I'm like, but that's not really ethical. And you guys you're not qualified to even provide an answer. But it's marketing. I mean, marketing has gone from, you know, what we see on commercials to all around us, and it's bombarded. We're bombarded by it every single day. It's going to be on social media. It's going to be on all the ads on Facebook. And I think the best thing you can do is really, like, get a couple of really high quality sources of information, and you have to turn off the rest. Like, I tell some of my clients, like, you absolutely have to stop following some of these people, because I understand, like, it makes sense, but every time we meet, I explain it to you and it's wrong. Like, at some point you have to understand, like, this person has been wrong the last 12 times that they brought up something, like, and I can do that with pretty much every really popular nutrition and health person, like we can just take their claims and break them down and show how they're scientifically wrong. But it's so easy to put out information if it's not science-based. Like if you're just making stuff up, you can put out 20 pieces of content a day on that.
Yep. And people will eat it up.
You can put out more content than what can you, like what, like I can discredit, you know what I mean? Like what that anybody can possibly discredit. And that's what these people do. You'll see these people everywhere. And it's because they're like, for one example, you know, Dr. Eric Berg, for example, like he's a low carb fanatic and he'll put out every single piece of content. And it's the same thing every time.
Yeah.
He's like, how do you cure cancer? The same thing that I told you for diabetes and high blood pressure. And that's not how it works. That's not nutrition. Nutrition is going to be different for different individuals, and we can't cure cancer, period. Like it's just not going to be able to do that. But, you know, these people make it seem simple and they make it seem like they understand the science, but the reality is that they're just marketing. And that's the hard part.
Is there for someone listening right now who's now thinking like, wow, I probably need to go through my social media feed and maybe look at who I'm following here. Are there any like red flags that you can think of for these misinformation sources that someone should really just pay attention to and say, okay, you know what? This is one of those people, I need to unfollow them.
How
do you separate the truth from the misinformation, the scammers, the marketers who are just trying to sell books and, you know, hustle?
Yeah, definitely. So when someone speaks with absolute certainty about a topic and it's just black and white, huge red flag. Like when they say carbs are bad, you know, low carb is the best for everyone, or, you know, everyone should be on a low carb diet, things like that. That's a huge red flag. Any black or white, you know, talk is going to be a red flag because there are no absolutes in nutrition. Everything depends on so many factors. So that's an important red flag. Another red flag is when people, I mean, when they don't have training in nutrition. I don't want to make it like I hate to do this, like to make it like a barrier of entry of saying like, hey, they have to have a degree. But the reality is that there's a lot of MDs who they got no training in nutrition. And they understand the body, but then when they never read actual nutrition research. So they think they know what they're talking about. And this most of the keto, low carb community, it's mostly MDs who they haven't read nutrition research. I can promise you that. Same thing with Mark Hyman, for example. I can hear him speak. I know he hasn't read nutrition research because he speaks about certain things that aren't consistent with the body of evidence in nutrition. And I don't want to make it seem like everything comes down to science, but if you're not using evidence, you're making stuff up. It's really important for the listeners and for consumers to make sure that you're not getting information that's just being made up, because you're going to hear something from one person, then you're going to hear something from another, and then you're going to be confused, and then you're going to say, why is there so much disagreement in the nutrition space? And there's not. Like if you actually if you go to a scientific conference and you ask, you know, a question, 99% of the people there are going to agree on nearly every topic, because the science is very clear if you actually read the science. It's really hard to understand it, but the black and white speak is really, really important. Credentials is definitely another factor. When people demonize big pharma is another one. So yes, big pharmaceutical companies have definitely, they have sleazy marketing tactics, and they've done things that I would not back up, and I definitely think that people are over-medicated by far. The pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry has way too much corruption in government and hands in government. But when people demonize big pharma, it's a way to sell you something else oftentimes.
Well, that's another, it's a marketing tactic. That is part of the marketing tactic strategies that you learn in these marketing courses. There needs to be a bad guy and then you're the good guy. So understand that that's what they're doing is they're positioning, they're painting the picture of the bad guy who's out to get you and they're the hero. They're going to come in and save you. So it's right back to what you said about marketing training. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And it's important as a consumer to be aware of these tactics, but again, as a consumer, you don't want to have to learn marketing. And that's why it's so important to just whittle down, like find a few trusted individuals and stay there and don't deviate from that. Those people can usually answer all of your questions. And I know it's fun to like venture out and some people post nice pictures and nice recipes. But if they're interjecting that with telling you need to go carnivore for better health or something like that, like you got to get away from this stuff because the extremes are they dominate the space. And when you say something that's so far away from what popular culture has deemed, you know, appropriate or you know, necessary, like, you know, we've always needed vegetables. So it's very easy to say we don't need vegetables and gain followers.
Yeah.
And so that's what these people are doing. And I've seen it and it's, like I said, I paid a lot of money to get into marketing courses and it's tempting. I started running a webinar at one point and got a few clients to it. And I stopped it and I was like, dude, I can't continue this, like, I'll forfeit that money and just move on. Cause this is not the way that this is the way that I want to build my reputation in business. Because at the end of the day, I mean, if I'm not really helping people, there's no point in me really. That's why I did this. You know, you don't get a PhD for money. The professors don't get paid nearly what most people think.
Yeah. So more on this, staying on this topic of the disturbing trends out there, you've touched on a few. You've talked about some of these recently on social media. And I'm going to have you tell us how to find you on Instagram at some point here so they can all find your content because it's really, really good. He should be one of the few people that you're following. What are some of the most disturbing trends that you're seeing right now? Because this is January. And this is like the high holy season of weight loss and fitness. So everybody is screaming their message the loudest, but what are some of the most disturbing trends, products, et cetera, that you're seeing out there in the weight loss, nutrition space, et cetera?
So one of the things that I'm seeing now, and it's not necessarily the most disturbing. The most disturbing is probably always going to be MLM people who are coaches in working with individuals who have health problems. Like that's a big one. And a lot of coaches, like there's a lot of individuals who have health problems who are working with people with gut issues, people with hormone issues. That's probably one of the most disturbing things that I see very frequently. But what I'm seeing this year, and I'm seeing it a lot more, is devices. Medical devices being turned into consumer products. And it's being done based on just misleading information. There's one where you blow into this tube, and it's basically measuring oxygen and carbon dioxide, and it's telling you your respiratory quotient, and it says you can have carbs now, or you should eat a low carb meal. It makes no sense.
I haven't seen this. That's insane.
I just saw this one. This is a new one. This is a device. You know, this is a device that's been used for research purposes. But a lot of companies are seeing the consumer market for taking these products and saying, hey, this technology is going to help you make better decisions about your health. Mm-hmm. And another thing is glucose monitors that have been done. Food sensitivity tests are another one that are done quite often that are basically making claims that they're going to help you make better decisions about your food. But there's some evidence to back up all of these things, and that's why they're so marketable. Is I can easily, like, if I wanted to, I could get on here and tell you why glucose monitors are the best thing ever, and everyone should be wearing one.
Makes total sense, yeah.
And I can get everyone, you know, most people listening to be like, oh my god, I need to get a glucose monitor. But the reality is, the science doesn't support that, and if you have a financial incentive to say that, you're going to say that. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who promote low carb diets, who take affiliate commissions from glucose monitoring companies. And that's the reason that they're promoting the glucose monitor. And then the glucose monitor, if you're eating carbs, the glucose goes up, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's damaging your health. But that's,
can you explain that very quickly? Because this actually happened with one of our clients just this morning, who's now like monitoring her blood sugar after every meal. And if she eats carbs, it goes up, and oh no, please explain why that is.
Okay. Not a problem. Yeah. Cause I could probably go into every one of these and it would take like 2 hours.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'll go into more detail on this one. So, with the glucose monitor, blood glucose is a problem when it's extremely elevated. And the longer the period of time it's extremely elevated, the more damage it's going to do. It's going to create oxidative stress. It's going to bind to hemoglobin. It's going to create all these issues because it's so high for so long and your body's not used to it being that high. Now, that's why the glucose monitors are great for people with diabetes, because they'll get into the 300s and they'll stay there for hours. So the glucose monitor will give them information about how they can get out of that. For the average person, your glucose fluctuations are going to be within normal healthy ranges. You know, you may go up to 200, maybe a little bit higher than 200. It's going to go back down. And that's perfectly fine. There's no damage being done in your body from that. If you also, so it had a monitor that was looking at triglycerides, which is fat in your blood, it would show the same thing. That's just normal energy transport in your body. So your body's breaking down all of the carbohydrates that you eat, turning it into glucose, releasing it into your bloodstream, and your body's using that for fuel. Unless your glucose level is elevated for extended periods of time, it's not a problem. And if it is elevated for extended periods of time, that's going to show up in a very easy test, which is called a HbA1c test, which is like $10, I think, like, or $20 in most places. Whereas these glucose monitors are $200 a month. So, and then when you do, if you do purchase one of these glucose monitors and you wear it, you're going to be ignoring so many other risk factors by trying to reduce glucose. And the main thing that's going to reduce glucose from a nutrition standpoint is eating less carbohydrates. And so this monitor will essentially favor towards a lower carbohydrate diet, making you think that that's the best option. But it's only because it's ignoring other important factors and not, you know, paying attention to the entire picture. And so when you hyper focus on, you know, one unit of energy and ignore the other one, you're missing the boat. And this is what when continuous triglyceride, which is fat in the blood, that's the alternative to glucose, when those come out, it's going to be the same thing. You know, people are going to be selling continuous triglyceride monitors and promoting a low fat diet. And I don't know if like people are going to eventually start wearing, you know, blood glucose monitors and blood triglyceride monitors and then just not eat fat or carbs and just eat protein. I don't know where this ends. That's the thing where I kind of see this, like, I understand some aspects of wanting to use one, but at the same time, if you don't really understand what it is that you're monitoring, you can be led to believe that keeping blood glucose as low as possible is important, which I see a lot of people promoting, and that's not the case. You know, if blood glucose is 150, you're okay. You just have a lot of energy in your body that's available for energy.
Yeah, so that's very, very helpful. I'm really glad that you broke that down for people, because it is definitely something that has kind of weaved its way into everyday conversations with people about nutrition. Is, what about my blood sugar? Should I be pricking my finger every day? And should I get one of these monitors on the back of my arm? And it's just, yeah, the world has become very hyper-focused on carbohydrates and fear of carbohydrates. And you touched on something a minute ago too, with the food sensitivities. That's another source of food fear, is people being afraid of different food groups or whatever. So, you know, if someone thinks they might have a food sensitivity, what is the correct course of action?
Okay, so let me start by saying, and this is probably going to confuse some people, but I'll explain it a bit, is we're all sensitive to everything at a certain point. You know, if you have too much of anything, you're going to have a reaction to it. So a food sensitivity is just a reaction to a certain food. Food sensitivity tests are measuring specific antibodies oftentimes, which may or may not indicate that you are actually reacting to that food. So, you know, the best course of action, the only way to actually determine a true food sensitivity is to remove that food from your diet and then to reintroduce it. And my recommendation is when you reintroduce it, reintroduce a small amount and, you know, have the exact same meal that you had the day before, but with that food. So for example, if you think you're having a problem with gluten, you take it out for a couple of days, and then you have spaghetti with a gluten-free pasta one day, and then you have a spaghetti with a gluten pasta the next day. Everything else in your diet, try to keep it the same. And when you have the gluten pasta, I mean, don't try to have too much because there could be other reasons why you're reacting. If you're eating too much, if the portion's too large, things like that. But if you do that and you notice that, okay, gluten, when I had the gluten, I reacted. That's how you determine, that's really the only way to determine a true food sensitivity. And when I say reaction, everyone's reactions are different. Some people can get headaches or hives or itchiness. You know, there's a variety of food reactions that can occur. Joint pain, most of the reactions are going to occur in the gut. Oftentimes, gut reactions are the interaction between your microbiome and the fiber that you're eating, the types of fermentable carbohydrates that you're eating. Typically, that's what's driving a lot of the gut reactions. Sometimes it's immune reactions and things like that. But that's really the only way to determine it, because if you have a headache, that could be driven by so many different things, and we can't measure those in the blood at this point. Now, 20 years from now, when technology improves, maybe we'll be able to do that. But at this point, we can't. And when you're measuring, when you're doing food sensitivity tests, it's kind of like some of the other stuff that I described. There's a little bit of evidence for it, but I in my own practice, I saw some studies and I actually thought it might be useful early on. And I've read 40 to 50 food sensitivity tests from other clients who got food sensitivity tests from other practitioners. And I can say confidently that it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. Like if you have digestive issues, you're going to find that a lot of stuff's going to show up. And oftentimes that's going to lead to excessive restriction, which makes things worse. And so that's why I recommend against it, because I've seen multiple cases where people have removed 27 foods on top of the 25 foods that they already knew that they reacted to. And I met one person who only ate turkey for a year. And so I work with some of the more complicated digestive cases. So I've seen some really, really extreme versions of people taking these tests and going from practitioner to practitioner, chiropractor, ND, you know, it's many practitioners who are not trained in nutrition and who have all placed restrictions and beliefs onto this individual oftentimes that makes it very difficult for them to actually do what they need to do to get better.
And so if someone has all of these gut issues, instead of pursuing all these different avenues of elimination and food sensitivity testing, they really should go and see who, like, what should that step be?
So step one should be a good GI doc. Step one. If you don't like your GI doc, if you mention nutrition and they brushed it off, if they don't listen to you, find another one. They work for you. I promise you, there's a lot of bad ones. I know there are. Like that is one of the reasons that I actually went into this, and I didn't talk about it earlier, but I had some gut issues myself that I fixed with nutrition, like pretty quickly after dealing with some medical, you know, medical interventions for months that weren't helping. And so find a good GI doc that can give you a good diagnosis, because it's important to rule out like inflammatory bowel disease, diverticulitis, polyps, any of these things that can contribute to very serious issues You want to rule those out. Now, if after you've done that, nutrition is one of the most important things. Like, this is the part that I don't get, like how a GI doc doesn't understand this, because everything you eat goes in your gut. Like, how would nutrition not be the most important thing when it comes to your gut?
Right.
So the next person to see is me. If you have all these GI issues, because you want someone who knows nutrition, period. If you have a GI issue, nutrition is going to be the most important factor that you can modify. Like, it may not solve it, and there may be things that are completely out of your control, but the most important thing that you can control that's going to make a difference with any GI issue is going to be getting your nutrition dialed in. Now, if you can't, of course, like work with someone, follow my content. I have you'll see my main page. It's called on Instagram. It's Dr. Adrian Chavez, Dr. Adrian Chavez. And I'm sure you'll link it in the show notes. But aside from that, I have another side page called Digestive Health Blueprint, and that one's all gut stuff. And
oh, so awesome.
My intent is to build that one up. I know I mentioned early on, my goal is to create courses this year is where I want to focus my attention, because I want to reach more people. So being able to help, you know, break down. So with that, I'm creating two courses, one for IBS and one for IBD over the year. And so I want to break down like what you can do, the simple things that you can do, where to start, all the stuff that I go through with my clients, because I can put 90% of that into a course and charge a lot less for it. So yeah. It's a lot harder to work one-on-one with me, and it's going to be a lot more costly for that. But you know, the important things usually early on, so when it comes to nutrition, schedule is really important for a lot of people with digestive issues. So if you're dealing with gut issues and you're just eating at random times, like, your digestion has to follow your circadian rhythm as well. So schedule can be really, really important for helping like reduce bloating and help with digestion. And it's so simple, you know, just changing the schedule. Like, okay, I'm going to eat 3 meals a day instead of just eating whenever food happens to be available. Yeah. That makes a difference. Simplifying your meals. So a lot of people understand the things that really cause problems for them, like the real sensitivities. So you want to take those out for a period of time and simplify your meals so that you can really identify, okay, these things feel really good and these things don't. Like, when I have them in, and it's hard to tell that if your meals are very complex. So sometimes I work with people who, you know, they're trying to do all the right things early on by, you know, eating a bunch of different veggies and things like that, but they're still dealing with a lot of GI issues. And it's like, well, we don't know what's causing it, because your day-to-day, you're eating so many different foods day-to-day and so many different foods at every meal. So really dialing in those food sensitivities is a good place to start. And when you know exactly what you're reacting to, that's a really good diagnostic marker as well. And for me, you know, from my side, it's hard to do that on your own. And my goal is to kind of outline that in the course, but like, if I know that you're reacting to FODMAPs or sugar or high fat foods, and when you combine that with history and other factors, like, it gives a lot better picture about what might be going on. So for example, I had a client that was reacting to high fat foods. So we kind of dialed it in when she was eating more fat, and I knew that her history was, you know, she got her gallbladder taken out, and makes sense. Like, everything made sense. So I was like, hey, let's just try some bile, see what happens. And she just takes bile in her high fat meals and no issue. Like, and so she dealt with years of IBSD, like over 10 years of IBSD. And that was like, we changed her nutrition a bit, and I got her to, you know, pay more attention to how much fat she was putting into each meal. But that was really the fact that just those two small things. But you know, it's sometimes you got to dig into the history, and I do that with clients. It takes a while in digging into the history, learning the food sensitivities, kind of breaking all that down. And that's why, like I said, I'm really excited this year to kind of put all that into courses to help people do that kind of on their own and really figure it out. Cause there are answers. The research is just very new. The microbiome is all new research. And I read well over 1,000 papers in this space, and they've all come out in the last 8 years, you know? So,
yeah.
So this is where, like, if you're not completely on top of this body of research right now, you're not going to get the right scientifically proven, approach. And there's not many people that are,
you know,
gastroenterologists aren't, most dietitians aren't. I don't like saying that out loud, cause I know some of them don't like to hear that, but, you know, it's most people really don't have haven't gone through the science to be able to help people with GI issues. And there's so many people with GI. I mean, it's, you know, 10-15% of the population who are dealing with chronic IBS and IBD and other things like that. So definitely want to be able to serve those individuals at a higher level.
I love that simplicity is part of your strategy there, because that's kind of the word I come back to with you. We talked about that at the beginning, that's your goal, is to help people simplify nutrition. That's actually one of the big things that we do with people, is just, especially when we're starting out, is trying to get them to focus on just a few basic things and just making things really, really simple. So for somebody listening right now who just feels really overwhelmed with all the nutrition noise, and like, one person says vegetables are good, and the next person says vegetables are anti-nutrients and they're bad. And, you know, what are some really simple things that someone who just wants to be healthier, maybe lose a few pounds, you know, have better digestion in general, what are some really just like two or three basic things that you have people start with?
Yeah. So I always come down to like break it down to two things. So the two things that are most important in nutrition are how much you eat and what you eat. So, you know, how much you eat, we have to have an understanding of this. So if you've had trouble with weight management in the past, it would be really important to understand how much you're eating, like getting a handle on tracking your nutrition and understanding if that's appropriate for you. So calculating, you know, my body needs 1800 calories. Well, what am I eating right now? Is it 24? That's going to be too much. So getting a handle on that can be really simple. Just quick calculation, track your calories for a couple of weeks. It's annoying. No one would ever want to do this long term, except for like bodybuilders and stuff. I hate tracking my calories too. I know everyone complains about it, but when you do it, it's eye opening. So how much you eat, important. What you eat, we can get into details about superfoods and nutrients and things like that, but it really comes down to processed food is like one of the simplest things. And it's not that I'm not demonizing processed food, because you can make processed food healthier by processing certain things into food. But the reality is that the average American is eating, the diet in the United States diet is over 50% ultra processed food. This means chips, cookies, cupcakes, Powerade, sodas, those types of things. If those make up a good percentage of your diet, that's the problem. Like, we need to get that stuff out and get some fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and whole grains and whole foods, unprocessed or minimally processed foods, into your diet. If that's all you do, you're gonna make a huge improvement. So like, even for example, say for like, instead of going out and getting a burger and fries, you know, highly processed food from a fast food place, if you made that at home,
yes,
and you made it with lean ground beef and you made it with potatoes, and completely different nutrient profile, completely different calorie profile, completely different way that it's going to fill you up, and it's still going to satisfy your taste buds. Now, it may not satisfy in the same way early on, but after you do that for a period of time, you're going to prefer the home cooked burger, because you're going to prefer the way that it makes you feel. Because when you eat the home cooked burger, you feel okay the rest of the day. When you eat the McDonald's, you'll notice the difference. You don't notice the difference when you live the difference. You live in the fast food and processed food, where that makes up, if that's making up, you know, 40, 50, 60% of your diet, you know, really just kind of examining things, that's the change that needs to be made. And that's the change that really cooking at home, preparing your own meals, eating from mostly whole, you know, unprocessed food, that's gonna make the biggest difference. You don't have to complicate it beyond that. Now you can, and I love complicating it beyond that. I can get as complicated as, I love getting really into the details and talking about the specific nutrients. But the reality is that if you go from just eating a lot of processed stuff to just stuff that isn't processed, you're gonna be getting more fiber, more micronutrients. Your food's going to be more filling, so you're naturally going to eat less, and that's going to have the biggest health effect of any other change that you can make.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you said earlier with, you know, how people like all of these trends and crazy things, and I think everyone wants the answer to this problem of weight loss, obesity. Why do we all feel so bad? I think everyone wants it to be something that's more complicated than it is. But if you're following the right people who are basing what they're saying on science, it's actually pretty boring, really unsexy stuff. And we're all saying the same thing. It's lift weights, walk, sleep, drink water, eat mostly whole foods, do most of your cooking at home, and have some sense of like quantity, how much food you need in your body to fuel your activity level. Like, that's it. Did I leave anything out?
Do it forever. I mean, like, honestly, I it blows my mind, like, how effective what you just said is. Like, I get really detailed and crazy with my diet and nutrition sometimes, but for the most part, for the last 18 years, like, those are the things that I've maintained, and I feel better. I'm going into 35. Like, I feel better than I did at 25 in every way, in every way. I'm more athletic. I have better aerobic capacity. My joints feel better. I have more energy. I wake up earlier, like, every single way.
Yeah.
And when I think about that, it blows my mind. And it's not even like I'm not living a crazy lifestyle. Like, I'm not like waking up and training, you know, or I train really hard. So I don't want to use that as an example, because I train pretty hard, but I've only been doing that for the last couple of months. But the, you know, the nutrition, like, for the most part, for most of the last 18 years, like, I've eaten fast food once a week. I've had alcohol pretty much multiple times a week, every single week, the entire time. Like, I've always eaten bread and pasta, and when I'm offered cake, I always eat it. Like, I don't live a restrictive lifestyle at all.
Yeah.
And if I did, you know, I could be super chiseled and you know, physique competition level type thing, but I don't care.
Right.
Because it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Like, I can live this forever, and I'm happy with the results. I'm happy with what I'm seeing in terms of, like, aging process so far. And it's just, it's boring. Sometimes I want to mix it up for myself. Like, this is why, you know, goes back to what you just talked about, like, or what I just mentioned. I said that, you know, I've been exercising like crazy just because I want to do something different. Cause I've been like, I wake up, you know, I lift for 45 minutes. I do cardio 3 times per, like, I've been doing that for so long that, like, it's so boring that now I want to mix it up and make it, you know, exciting in some way. But
yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I'll do this for a couple of months and then back to the boring stuff. Cause
that's your default. Yeah.
Yeah. It just works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange world we live in, but I'm glad that there are people like you and more people like you out there. And I'm going to help my community get connected to you, but I think you already mentioned your Instagram. Can you say it one more time so they can find you?
It's Dr. Adrian Chavez. So Dr. Adrian Chavez. And, yeah, definitely. I mean, like you said, the strange world, but I think people are waking up to the marketing and getting savvy to it. And there's more people seeking out better sources of information. And so hopefully we can turn the tides in this space, because this space is, and I another piece of this, though, I think, is this space was founded when there wasn't science. So that's another thing that I think about often as well, is in nutrition and fitness, there really wasn't science. Like, there wasn't much up until the last 20-30 years. So I mean, there was, but the amount of nutrition science that has been published over the last 20-30 years far outweighs anything 30 years before that. So I think we're shifting into nutrition actually being understood as a science, whereas before It was a guessing game. It's like do whatever the other person who looks good does. And so we didn't really understand the body well enough to say, hey, this is what you really should be doing. Even with like early dietary guidelines, that's why they're so bad, because there was barely any science to support anything at that point. So they were basing it off like 8 cross-sectional studies, you know. More than that, I'm exaggerating a bit, but yeah, that's, and so I think we'll see a tide turning. It's just we got to just stick with it, and I love what you're doing as well, and like trying to educate your audience as well, and helping them to really simplify it, because we got to get people to, I mean, it's simple and sustainable and consistent, and we'll see a population that's so much healthier. And I look around and I'm like, man, there's just so much that people are missing, and it's just because we have developed poor habits.
Yes.
It's not even that they're, you know, you won't like these foods aren't even that enjoyable. It's just bad habits. Yep. Like when you go to a place, you're gonna have access to
candy,
junk food, and not healthy food.
Yeah.
And that's what we built.
Yep.
And that's what makes it so hard.
Yeah.
And so you gotta kind of fight against that.
Yeah. I think once you understand that the environment is stacked against you, that's a huge eye opener. But you know, it doesn't mean you're powerless either. All you have to do is arm yourself with some basic knowledge, and then just drill in on your habits. And before you know it, you'll be doing like exactly what he said, exactly what I said. This is just what we do now. And it's so mundane. It's so boring and it's so monotonous, but it makes you feel so amazing that it's worth.
It's easier to say no.
Saying no
is hard at first. I get it. And that's why this lifestyle is a lot harder, is because you're going to be, but now, like, I mean, and I don't say no all the time, but like if someone hands me a piece of cake, like unless it's a cake that I really want to eat, like sorry, but no thank you. You know, if it's not something that I actually enjoy,
right?
Because I'm that's fuel for my body. Like that, my body doesn't need fuel right now. Like that's you know, the mindset shift of like my body just doesn't need fuel right now, and I don't even want that from a enjoyment standpoint.
That's such a happier, more liberating space to live in around food versus what we've touched on in this episode, like the fear around like, oh no, that has dairy, or no, that has anti-nutrients, or that has gluten, or what, just all of these crazy ideas that people are getting so distracted by. And it's, you know, they've lost sight of what is it, like the forest for the trees, and they're just looking at details that probably don't matter, and missing all these just big things that if you can lock those in, like that's going to fix most of your problems right there. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You summed it up really well. Yeah. I really appreciate you having me on. I love discussing these topics for sure. Yeah.
Well, keep doing what you're doing. It is awesome to have found you on Instagram, and I learn a lot from you, and I know our community is going to love you because they love people who shoot straight and stick to the facts and just tell it like it is. And that's what you do. So thanks for doing awesome work out there, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Stay in touch. Right. Bye. And thanks guys for listening. Definitely connect with Adrian on Instagram and let him know that you found him from the Get to the Point podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Woohoo.
Cool. Yeah. I haven't done one of these in a while.